Michael Campagna, Senior Investment Analyst at Morris Capital Management is here, and we're talking global investing now on the Money Life Market Call. Welcome to the Market Call, the part of the show where we talk with experienced money managers about how they do their job, what they look for that determines their buys and sells, what they see happening broadly on the market, and how they put it all together. And returning today to the Market Call, Michael Campagna. He is co-founder and senior investment analyst at Morris Capital Management. Morris, M-O-E-R-U-S. Why am I spelling it? Because if you want more information, MorrisCap.com. And what you might want more information about is Morris Worldwide Value, M-O-W-I-X, their fund. By the way, they are deep value investors, and that makes it particularly fun when we're starting to talk about what Michael sees in any given environment. So I'm always happy when I get to say, Michael Campagna, great to have you back on Money Life.
Thanks, Chuck. I'm always happy to be here.
So deep value, well, value means different things to different people. Deep value just adds one more layer to it. So explain what it is that you're looking for.
Yeah, as you know, value is a wide tent, and it's a kind of an evolving definition to many people in recent years. But we are we're tried and true deep value investors, and we look across a global universe of opportunities to do that. And what that means is that we seek to buy the securities of companies that we think are trading at a deep discount to our estimate of NAVs. Now, that's going to sound like every single other value investor because everybody wants to buy something that's cheaper than what it's worth. But what makes us different and what I think makes us true deep value as opposed to a lot of others is that we're not looking at earnings and trying to buy things when they're at a discount to recent earnings or to historical earnings. We really look beyond the current earnings of a business and try to determine what the assets of that business are worth. It's more akin to how maybe a creditor might look at a business, not trying to say, you know, earnings are currently depressed or the multiple's currently lower than it's historically been, but really what are these assets worth and how can we buy at a nice deep discount to that? And you know, as you would probably expect, we're buying things that are cheap, and things are cheap for a reason, right? So that could be because of near or midterm challenges to the business, to the industry, to the country, to the macro situation. But cheapness enough is not enough reason for an investment. Because there's always hair on these investments, which is what makes them cheap, we spend a lot of our time understanding the risks, both internal to a company and external to a company, of the business and assessing its likelihood of survivability. So that's actually where our firm name comes from, which is the city's defensive walls, which is basically a measure of survivability of the business. Because you can buy a business that's very cheap, but if it goes out of business in the ensuing years before things recover, it's not a great investment. So you know, we look around the world and try to identify opportunities where things are severely mispriced and where we can kind of have essentially a time arbitrage and wait out either the markets or wait out the near or midterm uncertainty and buy assets that are worth a lot more than they're currently trading at.
But that time arbitrage is an important thing here, because it's important to make it clear. You are not cigar butt investors, right? A cigar butt investor is deep value, but they're willing to basically take the last little bit of value that they could get. And that is a different style of deep value than your style of deep value.
Correct. And the way I would characterize it is, you know, we like to buy what people think are cigar butts, but actually is a full cigar. So, you know, we try to buy things where companies have been left for dead, maybe because maybe there's technological disruption to the industry. Maybe the industry is going through a decade long downturn, as in the case of oil services over the past several years. You know, we try to buy where things are, or expectations are near zero or are very, very low. But we identify assets that we think are very attractive over that longer term. So we're not looking for that last puff. We're looking for the situation where people think there's only one puff left, but we've got a lot of value to extract over many years.
In these market conditions where a few stocks really made so much difference to what was positive in the market last year, is it easier or harder to find those companies that are mispriced? Because, you know, not everything had a good year last year. That doesn't mean that everything is cheap, but relatively speaking,
yep,
everything is cheaper than you would have expected after a year that the market did that well.
Yeah, so I think you're hitting on a really interesting point. And you know, you think about the Magnificent Seven, and you think about the U.S. markets in particular, and how they've been driven by a very, very finite, small subset of the overall market. And what I think is that creates a really interesting opportunity for investors like us, and other investors who are focused on fundamentals, to be honest, to identify companies identify good opportunities, because a lot of these companies have just been thrown out because they're not named Amazon, they're not named Tesla, and nobody cares about them, right? So it's not even that they're bad businesses, or even that in many cases that they're going through challenging periods. They've just gotten cheaper because they're not Meta, they're not Google. And you know, I think it's a really interesting time from an opportunity perspective because of that. On the flip side, I also think it's a really dangerous time for people who are just blindly investing in the index, because the other thing, you know, that I know we've talked about before, and I'm sure we've talked about many, many times on the show, you know, is the increasing concentration of the index and the what I would call the increasing correlation of the holdings in the index because of that increasing concentration, which has been great on the upside, but it could come back to bite if we have another year like 2022.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit as well. Now, I should point out that Morningstar puts you guys in foreign small mid value. That's, I think, the category they have you in. And as might be expected, when you're looking to buy companies with hair on them, as you described it, there are going to be times when you are out of sync with, if not the market, at least your peer group, and other times where it's feast or famine. But the MOWIX, the Morris Worldwide Value Fund, has a really interesting last couple of years, because you were down near the bottom of your peer group in the pandemic year, 2020, 2019, the year ahead of the pandemic, bottom 10%, did great in 2021, then led your peer group, killed it in 2022. When the market was down, you were strongly positive. And then you killed it again, top 10% in 2023, when the market conditions were that dramatically changed. Now, I'll point out, not killing it thus far this year, that's not a big thing. I know you're not worried about short time periods, but this strategy in that period where 2022 was such a bad year for the market, 2023 was such a good year for the market, that riding that crest for both years, what happened there that allowed that to happen? Because that's not something that people who look at strategies that are willing to be in or out are necessarily normal, you know, expecting, because we had that bad to good change.
Right. So we had 2022 where, you know, it looked like value was finally coming back into favor, where fundamentals were finally coming back into favor. And then 2023 just reversed all that. And it was seven stocks that led everything again. We actually performed quite well in 2023. I think it's largely due to one of the unique aspects to our approach is we're buying things that are so out of favor and so cheap that the likelihood of non-market dependent sources of return are much higher in our opinion. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of the companies in our portfolio are either spinning off assets, selling assets outright, doing substantial shareholder capital returns, or taking other or non-market related actions that create value. And that's in 2023, what really drove a lot of our returns. We had, you know, I've talked about on your show, a company called Grupo Pau de Azucar, which is a Brazilian retailer that owned a Colombian retailer. If you remember, they had spun that Colombian retailer off, and then the Colombian retailer then got a tender offer for 40% above where it was spun off, and that's now basically gone. So, you know, a lot of non-benchmark reliant sources of return. But our portfolio, what I would like to stress, is a portfolio of 35-ish unique opportunities that, you know, have different life cycle, different life cycles, different characteristics are to one degree or another based on being in different industries, different countries, and different situations, you know, different reliance on what the market's doing. So, you know, we're not building a portfolio that's always going to go up when the market's down and always going to be down when the market's up. We build a portfolio of what we think are the 35 most interesting opportunities around the world. And we don't know when they're going to hit, but we do have a high degree of confidence that they are going to hit at some point. And in 2023, we saw several of those non-benchmark return actions happen. And that's what drove our performance in 2023, a year when, as you noted, it was seven stocks really that kind of drove things, or a small subset.